You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SF Youth Community Radio Station, broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your main host for today, Ed Tegan Marshall, and I'm here with my colleague Hale Rothery, who I'm excited to be doing a show again with today. How are you doing, Hale?
I'm doing well, Tegan. I'm doing well. I'm excited for the two of us to do a little show together, have a little chat. It's been a while since it's been just you and I, so I think it'll be good.
Oh yeah, I'm super excited to get your thoughts on this. So let's launch right into it. So today's topic is a bit of a combination of some of my thesis project research that I've been doing in terms of helping a person through the art of philosophy and the practice of introspection, particularly a person with a disability, find a sense of purpose and meaning within their world, and also for further research, community, and advocating for one's needs. So one of the resources that I am going to be utilizing is a YouTube video of a professor of philosophy who did a 12-minute video you can find on YouTube about disability. He's an esteemed philosophy professor who passed away some time ago, but I was intrigued by his conversation of disability and agents. Lawrence Becker, who passed away a couple of years ago, but he had battled polio, and as he says in the video, he was a case of reverse polio. His legs worked fine, but his arms were problematic. So he focused a lot on a conversation about agency, and particularly in my thesis research, that has been a main topic that I've been exploring, is in the context of narrative, how we build perceptions of the world. And so I'm excited to have Hale and his brain to combine forces and produce the show for you guys this evening. If you were to be in an accident tomorrow and lose mobility function, that would automatically raise a lot of questions, concerns, and challenges to how someone would find a sense of identity. And it is the question of how do you process a situation like that? One of the things that my thesis, that I put forward in the thesis, is that this is why whether you are having a lifelong disability, or whether that disability came to you later on in life, the fundamental process that philosophy can allow you to explore is how you as an individual respond to the situation, how you perceive the situation. And this can be seen in my work that I've done with a book by a Canadian psychologist, Dr. Jordan Peterson's book entitled Maps of Meaning, The Architecture of Belief, where he focuses mainly, particularly in the maps of experience chapter of belief. He focuses heavily on a conversation of how we come to know who we are in relation to the world. And And he uses the example of a toddler in his text who is wandering around, exploring, touching everything that she can get her hands on, and she comes across this statue, and it's a beautiful statue, and it's beautiful. She reaches up and she touches it, and she experiences the physical qualities of the statue, that it is cold, that it is heavy, that that it is smooth. So she gets all that sensory information and starts to build a concept of value around that. Her mother sees this and quickly swoops into action and kind of maybe instructs her not to touch that or don't touch that. And the child then also learns, somewhat subconsciously, that the statue is valued more when she does not touch it versus when she does. There is a higher social value attached to that experience. And so, but that's kind of an abstract example, but it's a concrete example of how we explore and we engage with the world around us. What philosophy allows us to do is to take a deeper look at what that all means. But in order to do that, as any of our good philosophy professors would say, the first thing we must do is define our terms. We must define what philosophy, what disability itself is in this context. I will begin with philosophy and then transition to a definition of disability in this show's context. That philosophy is the pursuit of knowledge, or more adequately to the etymology of the word, according to one of my professors, is the love of wisdom. But in an active sense, it's the pursuit of wisdom. Or you could even say that philosophy is the overarching practice that we engage in to come to what we would refer to in philosophy as an epistemology or a theory of knowledge. So how we come to know and understand something. And then in terms of disability, at least in the show context, I will be referring to a physical or mental, but focusing primarily on a physical impairment, whether that is mobility, mainly mobility, that would hinder that physical exploration of the world in the common sense. So before we dive deep into Becker and my thesis material, I just want to see if my friend Hale has anything he wants to comment on, any clarity, any questions, any observations.
Yeah, I really appreciate that intro, Tegan. That was great. There's a lot to unpack there. Some really interesting stuff. I was kind of writing notes, as I usually do, as you were talking. And I think I know you're going to get into a lot more of how people understand their own identity, the identity formation, especially in relationship to disabilities, whatever those might be, and the kind of impact that those have. But it's almost like the way I like to kind of think about it, at least initially, is it's a kind of dialectic. Like, as I'm sure you'll get into in your thesis, there's this way in which we're always already interacting in the world, but there are certain bounds and components to each of us that allow us to operate in particular ways or not in particular ways. And as you were speaking, this is kind of related to what you were saying, but what really came up for me is a discussion that I had with another philosophy friend of mine quite some time ago around power. And not so much power necessarily in terms of political power or social power, although that's part of it, but power in terms of, at its most base, like metaphysically speaking, we're talking about, like, you know, this concept, what is power? And as him and I were discussing, this kind of idea we came up with was power is the ability to operate. And operate in a given scenario. And so, like, unpacking that a little bit more, like, what does that actually mean? What does that expression look like? It means that, like, it's basically my ability. It's a positive concept where it's I can do something, right? So I am powerful in a particular situation. Like, I am empowered if I can cook. And what that looks like is I actually understand the technique of cooking. I understand the act of cooking. I can do it and I can operate in it. And then there's that relationship with other people too, in terms of like, and it's especially pronounced where if I'm with a group of people and I'm the only person who knows how to do that, it allows me to express myself in the world in a particular way that other people cannot do. And so that's what kind of came to me in terms of when you were discussing disabilities and identity, because I think the reason that came to me, I should say, is because I think we are all empowered and disempowered. Like, there are so many things I am able to do. There are so many things I'm able to do and operate under that lots of people can't do. But there's probably a lot more things that I'm not able to do, right? That I need to rely on someone else, basically. If I'm like, my needs have to be met by somebody else. They have to be met in a kind of some kind of bargain, whatever that might be. Now, when we talk about disabilities, as you're going to discuss, and especially understanding their meaning, especially understanding their association with identity, which I think is really the link to that notion of power or a power, you've got a very clear boundary, right? It's not that disabilities are the exception. It's that what they do for us, in a way, talking about individuals with disabilities, again, talking in a philosophical sense, as we're kind of all discussing and understanding, is that they delineate very clear, at least initially, what would seem like limitations. And I think sometimes we can actually be surprised by that. But it's a way for us to kind of look at, like, okay, as you were discussing, even with the Edward, the professor beforehand, I'll say his name again, Lawrence Becker. But, you know, he lived his life in such a way that, you know, he was thrown into the world in such a way, I should say, where he didn't have physical control over, you know, very important parts of standard mechanical human movement. And that obviously had a very serious effect on him, right? Now, like, some might say that was disempowering in a certain way. I would argue it certainly was. But in kind of bumping up against one's own limitations, are there basically new avenues, new doors, new forms of identity that come about from that? So that's what I have to say for now. That's like kind of the spitballing stuff that's going on in my own mind. But I'm interested to see where we go.
All right, well, let's get in the rocket ship of philosophy and take off to strange new worlds. And basically, I love what you said, Hale, because I think you alluded to in your conversation about power, about defining boundaries, about all that stuff. Lawrence Becker speaks of that as well. He speaks to a time where he went to a rehabilitation specialist who I believe was a psychiatrist or psychologist and said, I need you to help me with my panic attacks. He was getting very nervous about going up and down stairs. The rehabilitation specialist said, well, can the university move your office? No. Okay. Can they build a ramp for you? Possibly. And he says he went back to the university, they built him a ramp, and then he started to use a motorized scooter with foot pedals. And so the major thing that Lawrence Becker focuses on is not focusing on what you cannot do. He talks about accepting that, realizing that that's part of the context, but really focusing on giving power to the things that you can do. And he said, any good rehabilitation specialist, when you say, I can't do that, should direct you to say, well, you can do it this way. And I think that's a very empowering sentiment. For those who have not heard me talk about my thesis project, which is undergoing, My thesis project focuses on three main points. It focuses on world creation. So creating our concept of world in an individualistic sense. What situations are we in? What are we thrust into? As Jean-Paul Sartre would say, right, what are we born into? What are we looking at? So what world creation? World exploration. Right, so we go about it and we explore and we have experiences and we learn and we interact. We do what Dasein does and we reach out into the world and we gather experience and we gather knowledge and we take that back and we study that. And then world, so after world creation, world exploration comes to actualization. That with that knowledge, we take that knowledge and we continue to move forward. Move forward in a sense where we start to create pathways for us to communicate our needs, engage with others, and thereby make the world, hopefully, a more enjoyable place for us and others to be. But that's more the advocacy side, which is further research.
Can I ask you something, Tegan? Do you mind?
Go ahead.
Do you mind for me? I'm curious for both world creation and then the process moving towards actualization. Maybe from both myself and our listeners, what would a concrete example of that process actually look like?
Okay, sure. Yeah, let me take you through a bit of my personal story and show you in a concrete way how that came into existence for me. So when I was born between 26 and 28 weeks premature, so I was a tiny guy, and that caused there to be a lack of oxygen to my brain, which actually caused my disability. For those of you who may be in the medical professional side of things, that diagnosis was cerebral palsy spastic quadriplegia, which means that all four of my limbs are affected. I require a power wheelchair to explore my world, to get around, and I'm reliant upon relationships and trusted advisors to help care for my day-to-day physical needs. So when I'm talking about world creation, I'm not talking about this overarching world that we all dwell in, because I don't have that much power. But I'm talking about an individualized sense, a very Heideggerian sense of world, the world that a person themselves dwells in, which I'm drawing from phenomenology here, so the philosophical study of phenomenon, and primarily noting that everything I engage in, every opportunity I take, every relationship I engage in my individual sense, is me stepping into their world. When I say world, I'm really referring to experiences, is what I'm referring to. Is I'm referring to experiences which then shape how I act and respond and engage with people and situations. The third rule of phenomenology states that the world in which you dwell arises out of a fundamental commitment of the heart. And so what explores that sense of world is my very being, or the word that Heidegger uses, Martin Heidegger, for those who are going to fact check me later, which by all means, please do, talks about Dasein being the purest sense of being, that being that is possibility itself, that explores and interacts. So, right, I have no control over having lack of oxygen to my brain. That was a given. But then when I got older and I started going to school, this is where my world creation begins. Because I am able to intentionally interact with people and to learn from different people and different stories. individual worlds are colliding and they're opening my world to higher possibilities. So the world creation side of things is me reaching out for experience and stories and knowledge to help shape where I fit. And then the world, so I guess even I'm getting a little ahead because the lines aren't necessarily super cut and dry. A lot feed into each other, but at the core, world creation is partially just the situations you are born into, and then it's the more conscious actions that you take, especially when you're young, informing your friendships and your connections.
Do you mind if I comment on a little bit, Tegan, as well? I really like what you had to say in terms of like those. I've always been a big believer that narratives, this is a thing that I've actually had for a long time, that narratives are super important. Stories are super important. And you hinted at a few of like the key existentialists there, like my personal narratives. You talked a little bit about Sartre. You talked a bit about Heidegger. I think about people like Camus as well, although existentialism is obviously a very loose group. But it's kind of tough. I always feel like there's this tension between what we call like the world that we're in and our thrownness and like world creation, right? In the sense of, first of all, like you hinted at, I think a big thing to know is like the world, like the physical world, the universe, whatever you want to call it. I certainly don't create that. I don't subscribe to a kind of solipsism where the whole world is just projected from my mind, potentially my mind alone. There's no way to know anything further than that and that kind of thing. I don't think that's what we're getting at here. What I think is you already hinted at, and which is so clear in our discussions around disability, our discussions around power and how we attune and orient ourselves in the world is, you know, like I was thrown into a particular world, a particular kind of identity. Like it's this kind of weird, almost circular irony where I was thrown into being me, right? There's all these circumstances that I have. They're always kind of following me along. That sort of thrownness of my past didn't just start when I was born. It's still happening now, right? Like as I sit here discussing, you guys are listening, you know, like I can look back and be like, here I am now in my life. I've got this past behind me. I've got some kind of understanding. I'm always projecting into a kind of future because I understand myself in that kind of temporal language. I can't change the thrownness, so I can't change the facts. And what I think for me comes up when it comes to like actualization is, look, and especially in terms of like that at base world creation, at least for me, like there's actually not like on the one hand, there's not a lot I can do. And on the other hand, there's so much I can do. And the word that the phrase that comes actually came up to me as you were speaking, Tegan, was I am a participant. It's not that I'm a, like, sometimes I think creator is, like, too strong of a term, but it's, like, to me, I kind of think about it, like, both Sartre and Camus and Heidegger all have different ways of talking about individuals, and Nietzsche as well, that we talk about, you know, whether it be the they or the herd mentality or individuals in bad faith, right, where you've got people who are just like you living your life bumped, sort of dragged along and pushed along by the world around you. And it's not, I don't know if any of us can ever fully escape that, but there did come a point in my own personal life. And especially from reading philosophy and engaging at that, where it's like, I can't control everything, but I can participate, right? I can, as you were saying, like, take the knowledge that I've accrued, take the experiences that I've accrued, and like stand at each new choice point and say, look, I don't get to decide the rules of the game. I don't get to figure out all the options, but I can participate, right? I don't have to just be an automaton in terms of what I do and don't do, right, and who I am.
And this thesis does not work for someone who is a determinist. This thesis does not work for someone who is a determinist, because, right, it is true that in a sense the world creation or the world you are thrust in is determined. All right. For me, that was very obvious. The struggles that I would have as a child would be a direct result of other familial struggles and difficulties that would be challenges for my family structure. But this is where you can't necessarily do much in terms of how that individual world is created, but as Hale has noted, you can do everything in terms of world exploration and participation, right? It's like you're sent to school to learn stuff, but you don't really learn stuff unless you engage. Unless you engage with the material. If you just sit there and be like, nah, I'm not going to read this book, then you're not going to know, unless someone reads it to you, but even then you can tune it out, what that book is about. And maybe that's important for you. For me, the biggest thing, and the biggest thing for most people with physical disabilities, and particularly mine, that is just so severe, is relationships. And that was one of the biggest ways that I continue to participate in world exploration, is through, as Hale is saying, and this is something that Dr. Jordan Peterson echoes, is that narrative was so vital to humanity for so many years. And his main critique in Maps of Meaning, the Architecture of Belief, is that because of the scientific revolution, we have thrown out the ability to have multiple interpretations of an answer to these big questions. Because we say, well, science will give us the one clear answer. But the thing is, because our individual experience is so unique, that whole societies have radical different interpretations, whether that is how the earth came into being or whatever that is. Whole societies that have functioned for thousands and thousands of years may disagree with the traditional Western answer, and yet there is still beauty and there is still goodness to be held. So the question is, was the effort of the scientific revolution actually helpful for humanity in that sense of creating a sense of identity, or did we actually hinder ourselves in some way because we kind of took the stance that well, we know everything we need to know through science, and it's like, have we stopped engaging at that point? But one last thing, and then I'll see if Hale has anything to add here, is when it comes to being a person with a disability and the world I was thrust in with my challenges and struggles, it forced me to be very vulnerable, very, very, very open. And because I could not just, you know, I couldn't stand up and just walk away when I was having a problem. I needed to be able to communicate what I was thinking, what I was feeling. And because of that can be a great benefit. But it also causes some issues when you run into basic human disagreement and human conflict. Because there's this existential threat that comes up, because it's like, oh my gosh, what if this person leaves me? Because I need them. I physically need them. This is not just an emotional need. This is a physical need to be able to physically participate in the world. I need them. And you can't get much more existential than that. And I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your host for today, Tegan Marshall. I'm here with Hale Rothery as well. We're having a conversation about disability and agency, focusing on my thesis project. And if you're looking for past episodes